College Game Day is brought to you by Buck Roofing. Sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fixed the roof over your head. 913-384-2680 or rbuckroofing.com. And by Boulevard Brewing Company. Make this a season of great beer with Boulevard Brewing Company. Boulevard Brewing Company, Kansas City's beer.
Okay, college football fans, your time is now. Sports Radio 810 WHB now presents College Game Day with Danny Klingscale and Stan Weber.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to another Saturday of college football right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. All three of our area teams are in action today after two of them were not in that category last week. Stan Weber joins me from Manhattan, Kansas, where the Kansas State Wildcats were on extended homestand, interrupted by byes, which has not included been interrupted by wins either, joins us now. And Stan, an unusual 1:30 kickoff time today, a window that's completely different, a little earlier than the 3:30, a little later than the 11. I don't even know why this happens. Why do we get a 1:30 all of a sudden?
Well, the games that have fallen into this category are coming in the Fox Sports Net window. Fox Sports Kansas City, you know, where you turn the Royals game on, that is not the lead package or where they go to. The ABCs, the Fox, the ESPNs, ESPN2, ESPNU, all those things are kind of normal places for ball games. But each week the Big 12 fits in a game on FSN, and usually the window is pretty open with Royals baseball not on anymore, that they can put a game on at 3 o'clock, 2:30. So usually that game's 2:30. For some reason, it's picked up a little bit to 1:30, but it's in that area, Danny, where we would say is the perfect time to start football games. It used to be every game started at 1:10 around the country. I mean, almost every game in the country, you didn't have to ask what time the game was. It was 1:10, whatever local time they had there. So it's very close to that. It seems so surreal. It reminds me of the same eating pattern, preparation pattern that I had when I played, Danny, before they had lights. Do you realize in 1982, I played in a game, and it was the first night game ever in Big 8 history, K-State versus KU at night on TBS, and they were lights that were brought in temporarily.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then you go into the 90s, okay? You're into the 90s, and KU played some home games with temporary lighting. So it really wasn't until mid to late 1990s that we had lighting and games at night at all. It does not seem possible to me that I'm saying this, but it is pretty cool to think about the 1:30 kickoff. It's in the window, Danny. We always say 2:30 is the perfect time to kick off a football game, but 1:30 is not too far off with everybody moving around, plenty of time to get up. Your eating pattern can be what you want it. Your drinking pattern can be what you want, and it is awesome to see October football in the afternoon. Last night I watched a high school football game, and the wind kind of picked up. The weather was great, right? But it still was a little cold. You needed more like a coat than a jacket. But earlier in the day, it was perfect, and that's where we're setting back today. Kansas City, a little rain this morning. Not in Manhattan. It is complete sunshine. That system is moving through Topeka and Kansas City and going to clear out here pretty soon. But in Manhattan, it is already beautiful, on our way to 60, 62 degrees, and perfect football, perfect tailgate weather. In October, no better place to play than this part of the country.
We will be visiting extensively upon this game with Gary Patterson, the head coach of TCU, coming up. So in our opening segment, we'll focus a little bit more on Kansas and Missouri. Missouri is in Nashville today. Weather will be fine there. It'll be cloudy and warm at kickoff in Nashville, Tennessee. And this, pure and simple, is Missouri don't fall asleep game. You know, you're going to have enough fans in the stands, even though it's on the road. You probably have a home advantage, actually, except for the stadium itself. Vanderbilt has played awful football. I guess the only thing right here, or the only danger point for the Missouri Tigers, is the fact that Vanderbilt did play so badly last week. They got smeared by UNLV on their home field. And if they have anything to offer, you would figure with the season not quite playing itself out that this might be a pride point for Vanderbilt. That's about the only thing I can come up with here to provide a challenge for the Tigers, unless they just flat don't show up.
Well, Danny, you did a great job. I mean, that is the proper preparation and the proper way to start talking about a game, because it's hard to win college football games. You can never take games for granted. And I said early in the year, if you want to play along with me, and Danny, hey, it's our show. We've done this for 20 years together.
That's right.
We can play along a little bit, I guess. You'll allow me. This is the year where the theme early was, don't tell me what the name of the team is. They can play. And a lot of FCS schools can be dangerous. So I truly believe, like the NFL, that every time you win a game, it's a big deal. Let's don't take it for granted. We always respect when teams go on the road and play, that something can happen. So all those things are in place, and you laid it out well. But, man, that's like only 1% of the reality, you know? I mean, we can't build this thing up.
No.
Vanderbilt is not good, and their confidence is broken, and their coach has run the cycle. You know, at Derek Mason, you have that time, Danny, where you get excited and things are being built, even out of Vanderbilt, and you jump on anything good happening, and you see some improvements here or there. He's saying, I'm changing over my program. And you go through all those stages and have hope. But not when you're looking at a guy who's in his fifth or sixth year, okay? And they
right.
were 2-6 in the SEC last year, a 5-7 football team. Not a lot of enthusiasm, not a lot of great players out there that scare you. The defense is just playing awful right now. And then they come off a midseason, the old SEC non-conference game played later in the year, right? And they get beat by UNLV, who goes up and down the field and wins easily by 2 touchdowns. So this is a beaten-down team. We've spoken a little bit. If you keep track of what's going on around the country, the country music capital of the world, Nashville, has turned into just a go-to place in the country for all types of people. Go hang out in Nashville. And right downtown, you're only about a mile or so away from Vanderbilt's campus. So every time they host a game, people rush in town, party, and take over their stadium. I was there. I've seen it happen, and it's going to happen today with the Missouri Tigers. So you got all those things going against Vanderbilt, but mostly Derek Mason cannot create momentum right now. The defense can't stop anybody. The offense isn't dangerous enough, and they just aren't even as good as UNLV. I tell you what, this is a walk-in-the-park game. It would be unbelievable to think that this game could end up close because Missouri's defense is good. And when you have defense, Danny, it gives you a chance. The real question now for Missouri is how much will the offense come around? Kelly Bryant has done okay. Derek Dooley running this offense with a new quarterback, it's okay. But they haven't been really hitting on all cylinders. And why would we talk about that? Because Missouri is going to win 8, 9, 10 games because of their schedule and how well they're playing. But there's more at stake right now, Danny. It has fallen since we spoke last week. Georgia lost to South Carolina at home. So Missouri actually does have a chance in the East. Florida is the team to beat in the East right now more than Georgia, and Mizzou plays them at home, and for some reason they've had their number year after year against Florida when it didn't look logical that Missouri could compete or beat Florida. They control the game and win fairly easily. Could that happen again? And sure, the Tigers have to go to Georgia and try to prove it, but there's a chance now, Danny, if the offense picks it up, that Missouri could do some significant things. So today, what they need to do is take care of business against Vanderbilt and get a mentality, a road mentality, like we're Warriors, we're Mizzou, and why can't we be in the SEC championship game again? They need to prove it with concentration today, not get sloppy, because next week they play Kentucky, and it's a perfect stepping stone. 2 road games in a row, Danny, I think gives your team in a rhythm. You're going to be away from home. You better be ready to fight. Vanderbilt's awful. And Kentucky's only average. It's a perfect buildup. Take care of the awful team, learn how to win on the road, go to Kentucky and win that game, and suddenly you're looking at a 3-game road stretch where the big one comes at Georgia. Today is all about Missouri getting better, and especially on offense. Let's see what they do on offense. It does matter. We don't take for granted any win, but I mean 20 points. It's hard not to just say, I know you should never bet or believe in a 20-point spread of covering on the road in a conference game. But, Danny, I don't do betting, but if I did, I'd be looking at the Tigers, the Missouri Tigers. I don't know how they don't have every advantage in the world in this game.
Well, especially with the defense, because if you come out and the other team is fired up and they're playing with emotion, and emotion carries defense much more than it carries offense, and they're fighting hard, but they can't do anything whatsoever on offense, then eventually the defense just loses their spirit, and any score whatsoever seems like it's a game ender. And so that's the big thing. If this was a free-flowing game, if both of these teams, if Vanderbilt was bad but they were you know, pretty good on offense. Okay, you pick up some scores and it's 14-10 or whatever. This is more likely that if Vanderbilt comes up and shows how to shows that it's going to play, it's 3-3 early in the second quarter. That's the prescription for them, and that's a harder thing to pull off.
Yeah, and it's something I talk about all the time. If you listened any time during these 20 years that we've been doing this on Sports Radio 810 WHB, Danny, it's the danger factor, and Vanderbilt doesn't have much of a danger factor. You know, when you're going to go try to pound out a 17-13 win over Missouri, you know, it'd be much better if they were a high-flying offense with a bad defense and tried to, you know, we don't win many games, but we might beat you 40-37 if everything goes right. You know, for instance, Danny, I'll flip to a national game real quick to give you an example, because we won't spend a lot of time on this, because the best teams in the country, most of them have easy ball games, what appear to be very easy games. But Clemson, for instance, is on the road at Louisville, okay? And to contrast what we're talking about, Louisville can score and then go up and down the field. So we may see a chance today where you hear the scores or you're watching that game and Louisville's right in there with Clemson and surprising them and giving them some trouble. Because they're going to be fired up, they're going to have adrenaline, but they can score. I mean, you've got to be able to score to be dangerous, to pull off the upset, and that's not Vanderbilt's game. They need to do everything right, every field position punt correct to stay with Mizzou. And it's just not a good matchup. So I think Missouri's in very good position, and we'll see when, you know, will Clemson be tested by a team like Louisville that's getting a little more resurgent? That'll be something to keep our eye on as well. Or it might be, you know, 31-7 in the third quarter with Clemson, and they may have no problem. They have that capability. There's no doubt about it. But we'll see. I'm more intrigued by what Louisville might do. With Vanderbilt, this is just a scrimmage, because the difference, Louisville is going to be excited about having Clemson in town. They're going to be nervous. Danny, a adrenaline flow of nervousness, almost being scared. Oh, you shouldn't use that word if you're a football player. But you are a little bit scared about getting embarrassed and beaten up physically. That adrenaline creates a new level of performance that's crazy. And we see it sometimes with bad teams playing out of their mind and keeping it close. Vanderbilt will not get that juice. You know, it's not a disrespectful statement to Missouri, but Vanderbilt is not fired up about Missouri coming in. They're not right. Worried. They're not worried enough. And it's the worst scenario for a Vanderbilt football player. Because, you know, in the locker room you think, well, they're going to be really mad. They're going to really try to prove themselves. No, that's not what happens, Danny. When teams break down at this point of the year and lose to UNLV and their school doesn't care about football, their fans don't show up and everything else, no, it's just no momentum. Nothing good's going on. No one pushes a button that we're going to get better. But if Alabama were coming in, that's a little bit of an extreme example, but if Florida was coming in, you know, a top-level team, or LSU, Vanderbilt would get fired up because they'd be scared to death. Like, we're going to get killed today. If UNLV beat us, we might lose 100-0, and it brings out the best in you. You know, Kansas, we'll talk about Kansas. This Texas game might bring out the best in Kansas because they just go, uh-oh, we will get physically beat up and dominated if we don't bring it today. And it's not something that you talk about. It's just deep in your heart, you're worried. And that worry creates good reaction. No one's going to worry about Missouri. A Vanderbilt player can't get fired up like, oh, my gosh, the Tigers are coming into town. Missouri's going to come in under the perfect scenario. A lot of fans disrespected by Vanderbilt, so they can go crush them.
Absolutely the case. 6 o'clock on the SEC Network, so you can at least find that. I don't know how many Kansas fans are going to work particularly hard to get themselves some Longhorn Network to watch this game. So I guess the good news, if Kansas does lose in your scenario 100-0, not that you're saying it was going to happen, but the fear factor, not many Jayhawk fans are probably going to see it, but anyway, and this game's a 6 o'clock game as well. Kansas changes offensive coordinators. That is the keynote storyline as far as Kansas is concerned. Texas comes off the disappointing Oklahoma loss, and I guess the two scenarios there are what often happens in the Texas-Oklahoma series is that there's a letdown after the game for either team, winner or loser. But maybe in this case, Texas will be just angry about the loss and come out and take it on, take it out on the Kansas Jayhawks. We saw TCU do that. So I guess we really don't know what to expect from Texas, but this game's all in their hands, and the Jayhawks are just going to just try to get a little bit better.
Well said, Danny, because you put the two possibilities out there. Normally, historically, and Mack Brown and Bob Stoops did a great job of changing this at at Texas and Oklahoma, respectively. Used to be the week before they played that game down at the Cotton Bowl, they'd have their guard down and you can compete with them. And the week afterwards, win or lose, they both were spent and totally focused on patting themselves on the back or crying about the loss, but hardly showed up the next week. If you saw Oklahoma or Texas get upset back in the old days, it would be the week after they played the Red River rivalry. So that is in play a little bit because Kansas is not going to stir the Texas Longhorns' emotions. Okay, they're not listening to Herman at all about what they need to do to stop Puka Williams. They're thinking about trying to tackle CeeDee Lamb still, and the Oklahoma plays are running through their head, and they're sore, and they're disappointed, and they're looking right past this game. So there's a chance that Texas hardly puts the energy in, just kind of sleepwalks through and says, we'll be fine. And Texas does that more often than they should, and Texas has kind of done that against Kansas. You can go back and count the FBS or conference wins that Kansas has had, Danny. I mean, it wouldn't take fans around here very long to start talking about them, right? You know, all whatever, 3, 4, 5 there have been in the last few number of years, and Texas is one of them. Texas at home, they beat them. So, you know, there's reason to hope that Kansas can get some things done, but the other factor is Kansas may say, are you kidding? You schedule us at TCU after they get mad and lose to SMU, and you schedule us against Texas when they're mad that they lost to Oklahoma. So it's up to Texas. If they want to come out and try to focus. Remember, I thought Missouri's attitude should be about getting better for better things down the road, to play at a level that gives you hope of competing with Georgia and Florida and being the SEC East champion. And that's what Texas ought to be doing. They ought to say, okay, there's still a conference championship game, but that only comes into play, and our rematch with Oklahoma is what we should be focused in on, and we do that by getting better against Kansas and getting better each week because there's a lot of dangerous teams in the Big 12, not a lot of great teams, but a lot of sound teams that are dangerous to Texas. They need to get to work, and not so much because they're mad like TCU was, but they need to get better and make sure that they secure second place and get a rematch with Oklahoma and can get back into the national scene. So it is all about Texas. Now, from Kansas's point of view, I think KU will have a good mentality going into this game. Everybody's on board. Danny, everybody's on board. I mean, when the Chiefs fired Bob Sutton, I mean, I don't care who the new coordinator was, right, on defense, everyone was going to be on board. And it didn't matter that it changed things or not. You know, I don't think the Chiefs have changed that dramatically, but it was an easy buy-in. And we got the same thing with Kansas. Les Koenig is a guy, Danny, who's a nice, solid college football coach. And he did fine at Kansas. You know, nothing wrong. But it doesn't spark a level of excitement. So when they see him move off and this new young guy come in who's so exciting, so connected, so confident in what he believes in and the RPO game and all that, I mean, the Kansas players are all in right now. They're so excited. It's like a whole new start of life for them, and that they believe things are going to happen good. The question is going to be how they react when it doesn't go well, and we don't know when that's going to happen. But right now, there's a lot of enthusiasm from Kansas. It'll be interesting to see what strategy they use, because we've seen different strategies, right? Early in the year, we saw Kansas do some different things, and now we're going to find out what's the new plan, what is it going to be consistently, how are they going to get Puka the ball in space, how good can Carter Stanley be in the RPOs. We know Patrick Mahomes can kill people using the run-pass option because he can throw at all angles and has an unbelievable ability to strike the ball accurately when it's hard, Danny, to throw on an RPO. Everyone acts like it's all advantage offense and it's easy. Can you imagine being the quarterback, taking the shotgun snap, taking a step to your right, and realizing that big, bad, fast defensive end is not getting blocked. He's not getting blocked. You know, you don't have to worry about protection. He's not getting blocked. And here he comes. So now you get to decide, are you going to be able to pass the ball, or is he going to take an angle that allows you to run it? It's not easy to execute on the RPO game. So we'll see. But I think Carter Stanley has a chance in this because I think he likes things less refined. I don't think Carter Stanley's best game is, we're going to drop back 5 steps, you're going to hit that back foot, tap your feet a couple times, turn, and fire the ball on the in route at this time. Now, Carter Stanley likes things messed up a little bit, and that is what an RPO game is. Every play has a lot of looseness in it, because how does the defense handle themselves? You got a lot of choices. So I think this will be something that Carter Stanley could be pretty good at. Here's the question of the day. Will he be able to throw the ball enough and accurately enough to make some hay? Because Texas's pass defense has been a weakness, Danny. There is some room back there for some passing games. So let's see how Kansas plays it out with German. They're going to be excited about it. I think they'll be excited to play Texas. And let's see if they can have some success in this RPO game and the passing game. All those things can be true and still be up to Texas. You know, Kansas can still fight even if Texas is mad. They do not have to get folded up. When within 5 minutes of the TCU game, it was a runaway smashing. That shouldn't happen today. Even if Texas is mad, I think Kansas can get some things done and get ready for what is the games that they need to win are coming up here soon. They had Oklahoma week off in Texas. That's not a good stretch of the season. They're really preparing, and Les Miles has done that. He made that change in the offensive coordinator to get ready for the chances to win some games down the stretch.
And there is a little bit of an opportunity. Texas's defense is banged up, and one of their best defensive players, if not their best, Malcolm Roach, sits out the first two quarters because of a targeting call against OU. So Brent Dierman and the offense maybe has a little bit of a window of opportunity there to get off to a good start. And getting off to a good start, no doubt, is very important because they don't want to think, they want to buy in right away. Like you said, they're bought in heading into the game, but 4-3 and outs, and maybe they're saying, well, this guy's in over his head. What kind of plays is he calling?
Yeah, no. Again, the cancer starts within. People have listened to us enough. The biggest critics of the football coaching staff, Danny, are the players when it doesn't go well, okay? They bring up all the questions. I mean, if we'd let them say, what are the five questions that you have about your program? And I'm not talking about KU only, just anywhere in the country. What are the five questions you have about the program? You'd be surprised how they would be talking about the coaches, you know, the decisions or whatever. And suddenly they're going, well, where did this guy play? Bethel? Where did he have success coaching? You know, at the NAIA level? So it can turn fast, but right now everyone's bought in, and this is not a 1 week or a three series reaction, Danny, but you know, 3 or 4 weeks down the road, if things aren't going along, the players are going to be the first to say, why did we ever think this was going to work? This guy's never coached at this level before. So let's see. We've seen it in Minnesota. Their coach, row the boat. You know, he was all in when he's at Western Michigan and kind of quirky, and I think Dierman has some of that in him, just a level of confidence, and he doesn't worry what other people think about him. He's a football guy. He believes in what he's going to do, and that's great. I think it's a good decision by Kansas. I think they should be optimistic, but this is high-risk football, man. Every game, every loss matters so much to the psyche of a football team. It's outrageous, and that's why I love college football. There's so much at stake every week.
Well, somebody who loves college football a lot and has been coaching it at TCU for 19 years is our guest coming up next. TCU's Gary Patterson will hit the field in a place so familiar to him in Manhattan, Kansas, for the 1:30 game that Stan will call on the K-State Network. And we'll visit with Gary Patterson, TCU head coach, coming up next on College Football Game Day. Welcome back to College Football Game Day right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It is our pleasure right now to be joined by Gary Patterson, the head coach of the TCU Horned Frogs. They take on the Kansas State Wildcats in a 1:30 game in Manhattan, Kansas today. And, of course, it's always a homecoming for you, Coach, but there's business to be taken care of. How do you balance out those things, or are you just so used to it now that it's commonplace for you?
No, you know, everybody that knows me, when it comes to game day, it's game day. It's I get a chance to see family. Maybe I got a chance to see some last night, and then maybe after the ball game. But when it comes to later on Friday night and then Saturday morning, it's all about trying to win a ball game. And you know, it's always a bittersweet for me coming back to Kansas all the time. So it's a lot of fun for me to walk in that stadium and get a chance to be in. It's always a great crowd. There's always, there's a great ambiance about being in the stadium with the Wildcats. And, I've enjoyed it every time I've gone up there, win or lose.
Gary Patterson, in his 19th year, has won the last couple times he's come to Manhattan with the TCU Horned Frogs. It kind of reminds me, I've never asked you about this. It's dead focus game day for you. But what's your routine 2 hours before the game or whenever the team arrives at the stadium? You're the defensive play caller as well as the head coach. There's a lot of things to go on. Some people walk out in the field. Some wait to the last minute. You know, what's your routine as you get ready for the kickoff?
Oh, no, I just check the wind, make sure on special teams as far as where the wind's blowing, and then I'm inside getting ready. You know, it's going through all check sheets, making sure everybody's where they need to be, and going about our business. So it's, you know, it's you spend all year long trying. You get 12 opportunities, so it's one of those where it's this. You know, today is another one of those opportunities to get done what you need to get done.
Now, what time do you go out on the field then? How much before the game?
Usually I go out about 40 minutes before. I wait till the skill guys come out on the field. So I'm, you know, I do that so it stays in the same routine. So when we're at home, so I can deal with recruits. You know, so everything stays the same. I think everybody does better when there's consistency. And so how we do it at home, same way how we do it on the road. As far as when I go out, when I'm where I'm supposed to be and how I'm supposed to do it. So, you know, it's I guess that. Some people may call that old school. You know, I just call it doing checking the boxes.
No, and you know, you took the words right out of my mind. I've said for so long, you work so hard, and there are just 12 opportunities. I don't know how your sleep pattern and everything else, what you eat and drink. I mean, you need to be firing on all mental cylinders on game day. The one thing that's a real curveball to me, Gary, is – but when you're at home, you got recruits, and you got to act all relaxed and happy to see them. Like there's nothing more in the world I wanted to do today than say hi to you. I am not a coach, but that would be the biggest challenge for me. What is that like, having to talk to these prospective student athletes and their families who are so excited to be on campus when you're an hour or two away from doing something so important?
Well, yeah, it's just what it is. I think, you know, I always talk to people about, you know, that you got to be able to flip the switch. You know, there's a difference between Gary and Coach P. And so the same thing goes with everybody else. But you know, it's they deserve our time. You know, without good players, you're not going to have a good football team. So you got to be able to recruit. You got to be able to take your time. A lot of times, that's why I like day games, because day games, and what I get a chance to do is I get a chance to spend a lot of time with the guys after the game's over. And so you have an afternoon. So you know, this game being at 1:30, when it's done 4, you got a couple hours. You can sit around and you can chat with families and do things that you couldn't do before the game. If it's a night game, that's a little bit tougher. But tougher is then you got an opportunity for your coaches to get out and go recruit on Friday nights a little bit better than you would 11 o'clock game. So there's positives to all the different times. So
you said there are two different people, Coach P and Gary. I would imagine if your wife thought you were maybe bossing her around a little bit, she'd probably be able to say, I need Gary, not Coach P. Is that correct?
I get that, yeah. And I also say, you know, you need to say yes, dear. And she says, well, I need to practice that more.
So. Coach, you played 5 games, and your defense has been quite good in the wins, and they've struggled in the losses. It's been a real dichotomy, not sort of close.
Really, it's been our whole team. I think as a team, we've either played really good or we played really bad. Uh-huh. You know, we have a lot of young players. When we had talent show night, we had over 50 guys that had – that's somebody that has never been in the program, whether it's new guy, the transferred, or freshman, redshirt freshman. So we had a lot of guys, which, you know, that if you didn't count the 50, that wouldn't be a redshirt freshman, so we had to be in here. So it's been a growing experience for us. When we played well, then we played really well. When we haven't played well, then we haven't played well. But, you know, like I told him, we either have to play. You have to play great, and you're not going to play all your games. Are not going to be tens, but you can't be below 5. You got to be somewhere in the 6, 7 to 8 range on your other ball games if you want to win a lot more than you lose. You can't be down in the 3 and 4 range. And so for us, it's really over this last 2 weeks. It's really talking about, you know, high emotion. But you're not going to play 12 ball games at your highest emotion. It just doesn't happen. And I've been doing this for 36 years, and that's not going to happen. But you have to be able to play good, and people have to be able to step up, and you have to have great moments. And so for us, we've talked about, especially going on the road, because you have to take ball games. You can't. Home teams don't usually give you the ball games. You got to take them, and so you got to get ready to battle. And historically, since we've been here, we played good on the road. So.
And both teams are coming off a bye, and both teams have already had 2 byes. What are your thoughts on the 2-bye system?
you know, when you're playing well, you probably don't want any buys, and you're healthy. If you're not playing well and you're hurt, then you love the buys. And so for us coming off the Iowa State game was probably good. Very wet field. You know, we're glad to be back on turf something. We're built more for speed and moving around on a faster field. And so it's, you know, for us, it really took a lot of our game plan away, the wet field at Iowa State. So for us, I expect these guys to play a lot better.
Let's talk about defense first, because that is such a constant with you, especially when you think about TCU football under the 19 years plus. You've been around there 19 years as the head coach. You had a lot of turnover. I mean, when I was studying, getting ready for the ball game today, I couldn't believe how many seniors were on last year's team on defense and how many backups to the starters were also seniors. So you're talking about a giant turnover with young players. How are those players handling things? Who are guys who are standing out a little bit that we should watch for today?
Well, you've seen them, but, you know, without giving anything away, I think, you know, the biggest thing is that, you know, our older guys that have played that we've got, they've played pretty well. We've got some guys that will have a chance to be drafted on defense, and there's guys that, you know, we have a lot of young guys and backups. I think we have nine freshmen or redshirt freshmen in our number two. So, you know, we're very young. We don't lose a lot. I think we lose out of 40-some defense players, we lose four or five. And so, you know, we're gonna keep growing up, and that's what I told them at the beginning of the season before we even started playing is you got to grow up. And we've got to be – if we can stay healthy and grow up, then we're going to be a really good football team by the end of the season. And I still believe that. So, defensively, I got to keep charging. You know, for even as bad as we played in a couple games, we still sit very high, you know, a lot of the categories. So, that you know, we need to play that level against good people, not just get some of the guys we played. So, it's, you know, a one-double with Arkansas Pine Bluff. So, we need to play on the level we played against Purdue. Need to play on the level we played against Kansas and the way we fought back in the SMU game. So,
and you're doing that. Let's flip over to the offense with a young quarterback, and it's pretty amazing that you were at Iowa State last week and they're trotting out on the field was number 15, Max Duggan. The TCU starting quarterback was a star player in Iowa last year, and here he is in Ames, Iowa, starting for TCU. I know you can use Alex Delton as well, the grad transfer from K-State that people are very familiar with. But what about the dichotomy of a young quarterback, but with some veteran guys around him? You know, your offensive line, your running backs, you got a bit of both, inexperience and experience on that offensive side.
Well, really, offensively, you know, we're getting Tay Barber back. We're getting Mikael Barkley. You know, we're going to end up gathering a lot of speed that we didn't have earlier to go along with Jalen Reagor. You got two older tailbacks, and really our two younger tailbacks are really good players. You know, we're trying to do the redshirt thing, so, you know, we only usually try to play one of those guys every week so we can get through eight or nine ball games with it like that. We didn't play either one of those guys in our first ball game of the season, so it's that way that you could use them and get done what you need to do. Offensive line, we're older. We just got to keep staying healthy, which the off week, to be honest, we, I think, really helped them do that. Our tight end positions really come along. We didn't get a lot of production out of them. Pro Wells is really set himself up as being a guy that's a big body that's really helped us. And like I said, at the wide receiver position. But that was really where we're young at the quarterback position, and that's kind of held us back a little bit. And we had to play young because we've had guys out at wide receiver, but we're getting older there this week. And so it's, you know, you got to go play. We got to get the young quarterback. And Alex, you know, and I would tell you this much. Here's a guy that came out of Coach Snyder's program. He's everything that I thought he was. You know, I use him as a team captain. He's been a team captain for me every day, every game this season, and he'll be at the end of the season. He's come in. He's been a constant leader, done the things that we needed him to do. I knew that what I would get out of him, I would get a guy that would teach Max and the younger players how to prepare for a ball game and get ready to go and show leadership skills, and he's done all the above. So been really happy that Alex Delton, obviously he grew up close to me from Hayes, Kansas. You know, I'm from out in West Central Kansas, so it's been a great mix.
You are playing a team, as I mentioned earlier, that's coming off a bye. When you're doing preparation for a team, you have a body of work that they've done. But is there any thought in the back of your mind, well, these guys have had 2 weeks. Maybe they're going to just spring something on us in the 2 weeks that they've had to prepare for us?
Oh, yeah. Well, you always worry about that. You always go back through it. You know, there's a lot more film on us at TCU than there is at that staff at Kansas State. So we've actually, you know, we've had to go back through the – I'm not telling him anything that he wouldn't know. Go back through all the North Dakota State stuff of everything they would do offensively and defensively and special teams to prepare for the ball game. If you didn't have 2 weeks, it would be harder for you to do that. Mm-hmm. It allowed us to do that a lot more. So.
Okay, what is the state of college football, just generally? You've been a head coach forever. You've seen it done always. You mentioned old school. There's modern school. You mentioned that redshirt rule, which has turned into just the wildest thing around the country because it's not being utilized just to give freshmen a chance to get out on the field and learn a little bit. It's been used with guys transferring after the fourth game, et cetera. What do you think about college football?
Also, the way you just mentioned you used it, alternating use so that you can wait until after eight games of the season to decide something on a player.
Yeah, that's really
another way to do it.
Great utilization.
Well, yeah, we've been doing that. That's O'Shawn Mathis, which is going to be a really good, really a great player in our system. He played his last ball game he played was against Baylor in the 11th ball game in the season last year. We finally ran out of bodies, and he was able to give us some depth. He didn't play in the last game of the season. He didn't play in the bowl game. But, you know, he was able to redshirt. So it's, you know, we spent a lot of time every Sunday, every Monday before who we're going to plug into special teams, who's going to play in the ball game. They're not allowed to put anybody in the ball game unless they talk about it on the sideline if they're a young player. And maybe a guy that's been out for us, for example, Ben Wilson, a linebacker that we're getting back, hasn't played all season. You know, will he be a guy that we'd only play in for the next four ball games through the middle of the season here, and then redshirt since, you know, he's been out up to this point with an injury. So, you know, all those things play a part because I think they're really important of how you build your team next year. I think if you're not constantly looking at how you win all your ball games this year, but how do you do it next year, you're going to get yourself in trouble. So for us, as far as all the rest of college football, I'll think about that when I get out of the season. There's too much craziness going on right now with all that. You know, I'm going to be stepping as the AFCA president this next year, so I'll be dealing with some of that. But it's I worry about our game, to be honest with you. But there's a lot of great people in it. It's a great inspiration for colleges and campuses and really states, and so we've got to protect it.
We don't have time to go into Gary's thoughts, but you know, that's why it's cool that I'm his friend, because later after the season I can find out, you know, more about all this interesting stuff, your new position, a great responsibility, and real what you think about college football. Gary, it's great talking to you. Welcome back to Kansas. I know the K-State fans are glad to see you, and man, what a resume you've put together. What a great job as the head coach of TCU, and thanks for spending the time with us today.
You bet.
That's Gary Patterson, head coach of TCU.
Absolutely, and you know, I think that we have a situation now where, hey, rules are in place, and a coach's job is not to judge the veracity of the rules. It's to use them to the best of his team's ability, and I hadn't heard anybody using the red shirt rule like that, and that's – while the answer was going on, I gave Stan a big thumbs down. This is not what the idea behind the redshirt rule is. Now, he's smart. He's wise.
Like he's a general manager. You said use the rules. He's like a general manager.
Absolutely. Absolutely, positively. And it's extremely wise. A guy who misses five ball games and comes back now, you certainly have to think about the fact that why should we burn a whole year of eligibility if he's going to only play seven games for us this year?
So let's play four and pick the ones.
And a young player, if you've got enough depth at it, okay, today we're not going to play Joe, we're going to play Willie. And then when we get to, you know, an ultimatum, and when we get to the ninth game of the year, we'll be
or in later. They didn't play in game one because that was a bad opponent.
Right. So
game
ten. To me, all these unintended consequences of this rule that he's the president of, as he mentioned, of the American Football Coaches Association, going to be. That rule's got to be looked at, man. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, anyway.
Well, there's just so many unintended consequences that are affecting the chemistry of the football team, and there are certain things to take advantage of players' rights. There's certain things to keep the players safe and utilize their time on campus, keep them engaged. It's much better when you think you're going to play in a game, Danny. I see a lot of positives, but you know, you don't look no further than in Lawrence, where Khalil Herbert was one of the best players on Kansas's team, and he doesn't tell the team his intentions that, you know, I'm not going to play in the fifth game until basically they're getting ready or we're down in Fort Worth. I'm not sure which. Haven't sorted all that out. But they're getting ready to play game five against TCU, and that's when he says, I don't think I'm going to play anymore. I want to keep my year and move on to another place. So I'm for players' rights, and I think that utilize for a freshman and utilizing your roster when you get some injuries, you get some guys to plug in. And it's a lot easier to integrate into campus if you know you're not responsible for 12 games, but you are responsible to be ready for the next opponent. Because, Danny, it's easy to kind of fall asleep, at least emotionally, sure, when you're in the back of the room. We joke about in NFL, like some right. guys do sleep. But in college, you're in there, you're probably not going to sleep, but your brain is just shut off going, okay, let's get through this film session because I'm not playing this Saturday anyway. That's what happens with red shirts, especially young freshmen. Now they're saying, you're going to be ready to play this week, or you better be because we might put you in, or here's our program, you're going to play next week. There's a lot of good things, but, boy, unintended consequences is, for every rulemaker, those are the words to keep in mind.
Right.
If it's a tax law or anything else, people don't act the same when they see a new rule. And Gary Patterson really showed us some.
Yeah, absolutely.
Know, that's when you build depth. Like, why would you recruit two good running backs who are the same age? Well, actually, they don't have to fight with each other. They both can have their time.
And one of them might leave. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, and also, hear how many people he said are on his team that are new this year. 50.
Yeah.
I mean, the turnover 50 is great. New players, including transfers and redshirt freshmen, and amazing.
Well, Danny, when I built my boards, as they call it, right, in announcer world, and you...
I'm looking at one right now.
You lay them out, and there are this exceeds the normal space of boards tremendously. I mean, he said how many guys, he mentions a guy like Ben Wilson who hasn't even played yet, could be out there making tacklers. And compared to every other game, I am putting so many more people on the boards and getting ready because I don't know which of the freshmen he's choosing to play.
Right.
But he's using that four-game rule across the board with so many guys. I'm just going, normally it takes whatever the amount of time is to prepare, it takes about 25% more for TCU just because he's utilizing his roster so much more than other schools right now.
And I like the fact he said they can't send anybody out there on special teams without checking with me first. You know, the last thing he wants is like, okay, Bill's played four games, and then in the third quarter he's looking out there and he's running down on a punt.
Yeah.
And
a year of eligibility just blew out the door.
Exactly.
And under stress, you know, the coaches are like, hey, let's get him in. It'll be fun.
Right.
But he's like, no, this is a military operation here.
Exactly.
We're figuring these things out. The other funny thing about the quarterbacks, Max Duggan is a star from Iowa who's going to be playing. Danny, if you look at my board, Max Duggan is new, and there's hardly any detail about him. And then Alex Delton, I probably only wrote down two-thirds of what I know in my head about Alex, and it still is just a mass of information.
But he's played in every game. So.
Well, because he's been there. This is his fifth year at least, and he actually came to K-State a semester early out of Hayes High School. So he's been around for five-plus seasons. Or spring seasons, however you want to look at that. So it's kind of funny when you look at these things. I wish we were on a video right now, I'd show everybody, hey, this is what we're looking at.
People know what boards look like generally. And if they don't, they probably don't care.
Everyone's different, though.
Yeah, you know what you should do during the broadcast, Dan? You should tweet out your board to the K-State fans.
If I did tweet, I could do things like that. You know, if I did, what are those live, when you're doing FaceTime?
Yeah, Facebook.
Facebooking?
Or FaceTime.
Facebook Live?
Yeah.
Something? You know how much fun it would be? I mean, maybe sometime in my career we'll be into this genre where they just put that on right there in the booth. So they're sitting there watching Wyatt and me.
Are you sure you people. Want that?
Well, you know why I can say that answer very easily, that I wouldn't mind at all? K-State, in 1994, when they put the Dev Nelson press box together, the new one has now been torn down. We had an area in back, and they actually had visitors come watch us.
Right,
have had this week, still tradition. This week, when I am in the broadcast booth, just here in a couple hours, Danny, there will be people that I probably have never met who may have never been into a press box booth before who will be sitting up there with us. So, absolutely, I have nothing to hide. But that's the next level. I haven't seen that yet. Here's the camera on you. We're going to watch everything and look at, and I could say, here's what I'm looking at. Here's what I'm interested in.
Maybe I'll take a picture of your sheet, and then later today when the game's being played, I'll say,
yeah,
Stan, can I
that won't happen.
Send your
I don't
board
put
out?
This is for me only right now.
all the secrets are. Nobody would be able to read it. The print's too small.
Well, it's a good strategy, right?
Exactly. Stan Weber and our guest Gary Patterson, the head coach of TCU. They play the Cats at 1:30 today, and College Game Day continues on Sports Radio 810 WHB.